I'm going to read a bit from chapter one of Diane Meringue's book, How the Hell to Get Out of Hell, Other Dimensions and Psychic Phenomena. Somewhere in the silent blackness of space, a giant red star exploded, hurtling its immense shower of fireworks into the ebony void, and then it was quiet. The residue of the star floated noiselessly through the vacuum, and for eons drifted through the dark, silent, endless, motionless. Now enmeshed in a cloud of intergalactic gases, the star residue churned and boiled into a fiery mass. And then it continues. In a moment, Diane Meringue joins us on Coast to Coast AM. Diane Meringue is a producer, writer, longtime member of the National Academy of Television Arts and Sciences, formerly in Hollywood, and also a former investigative reporter specializing in public corruption. And she's used her extensive research ability to uncover various documented examples of psychic phenomenon and other dimensions, all happening according to the laws of science. And here she is on Coast to Coast. Hi, Diane. How are you?
Hi. I don't think Rod Serling could have read that first page book any better than you could have.
Without the cigarette in my hand, of course.
Right. Of course.
I'm looking at your ebook, and you can tell us a little bit later how to get a chance to read this for so many people. But I noticed right in the beginning, I guess from your attorney, did somebody pilfer your original book, your manuscript?
It was more than pilfered. It was absolutely stolen. And what happened was that some of my original theories came up on television under somebody else's name.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's about what I said when I saw it.
So you must have known the person?
I have an idea as to who it was, but nothing was ever proven. And if anybody can prove it, I ask them to please contact the attorney who is listed in the front of my book.
Okay, well, let's do you justice tonight. And, of course, you've got this available as an ebook. You should get this published, too. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's probably going to be published as a hardcover book, and that may happen comparatively soon. Now, I actually priced the book myself at only $5 as a marketing incentive, and once the agent makes the deal for the hardcover book, unfortunately, the publishing company will probably not allow me to sell it anymore at $5. And I expect that they're going to raise the price about 300%. Right now, the book is on a new division of Amazon called MobiPocket.com. And it's a www.mizandmaryo.com/pocket, P-O-C-K-E-T.
Okay.
And it's also on Kindle.
All right, and we've got a link for you, too. So people can just go right to your name at coasttocoastam.com and go right to that website.
Indeed.
Now, tell me a little bit about your life as a investigative reporter, and how did you make this switch into the psychic realm?
So you want to do the boring part first?
I always do.
Okay.
I build to a crescendo on this
okay.
show.
Well, I write really a very broad spectrum of things. I actually am going to be having the first episode of a children's television series up on Amazon in probably less than 3 weeks, and that's called The Best Kid Show in the World. Besides that, I also have the public corruption manuscript for sale, and it's with an agency right now, and they say it will definitely sell. I actually started working very young. I started when I was 15 years old at the Chicago Sun-Times and Daily News, first as a copy girl, and then later as city desk assistant. And, of course, I wound up at ABC in Hollywood working on the morning news and talk show. And we used to do an hour and a half live TV 5 days a week, and we'd have about three famous people a day on our show. We won the Emmy. We won the show Emmy for that show, and then the moderator also won an Emmy. And I'm a three-time regional Emmy judge besides that. And I've done all kinds of writing. I also used to have a very big contract with Don Johnson. He had optioned two of my westerns. And what happened was that...
The actor Don Johnson?
Yeah. And
the Miami Vice Don Johnson?
Right.
Okay.
And
okay.
I will tell you, he pays very well. He pays right away, and his checks always clear the bank.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it is. So anyway, we were supposed to do two of my Westerns together. One was the sequel to the first one. And someone didn't show up at the network. And they were supposed to be done as the Hallmark Hall of Fame, by the way. And CBS bought two other Westerns for development when, as I said, someone did not show up at the network. And that kind of brings us up to now. I mean, I've got the Westerns for sale. I've got the public corruption script for sale, and the book has just been published, and the children's show is going up, and that's kind of what's kept me busy lately. And I don't know how much else you want to know.
When did you leave ABC in Hollywood?
Oh, that was a long time ago. That was back in the 70s.
Oh, the 70s. Yeah. Okay, so I'm not sure if Terry Murphy would have been there by then.
I don't think so.
She's the one who went off to do Hard Copy. I worked with her in Detroit, and then she came out to L.A.
No, okay. She wasn't there, I'm sure, when I was there.
Okay. All right. Now, so let's do the flip then, Diane. So now, all of a sudden, you start investigating psychic phenomena. How did that happen in your life?
I'm not sure. I'll tell you, I was psychic in my life. My mother was psychic. She was also mediumistic, and she was very afraid of her abilities. And so I guess I'm just kind of a Pandora, you know, and I want to see what's inside the box. And so it fascinated me, and I wanted to know how it worked and why it worked and everything else. And the more I got into it, the more it really became an overwhelming situation, but a good overwhelming, because I found out about the dimensions, and I had some really incredible experiences in gathering information for this book. In fact, when I started researching this many years ago, I had to buy books from Europe that I couldn't get in this country. But it all came together, and so here we are. And actually, I used to lecture on this in the suburb of Chicago at a middle school. So if you can kind of envision me standing in front of a classroom up the blackboard and holding a pointer, I think it will help us along through all of this. And there's a really a lot of information here, so I'm going to be working from a copious amount of notes.
Okay, and speak up as loudly as you can tonight.
I'll try that. And I do have the phone up as high as it will go, so I may have to raise my voice if you tell me that I need to.
Sure. Okay, that'll be fair. Okay, so what was the first area you started to investigate? Because I know in the book you talk about EVPs, and I want to get into that, but what for you was the first area you decided to tackle?
Oh, boy, that's really tough, because I started on this in the early 1970s, and I think it was probably psychic phenomena in general, and, you know, why people are psychic. And then it built from there as more discoveries were being made, where they started to come out with EVP. And then subsequent to that, there was a lot of stuff that started with the near-death experience. And in the meantime, I had really a great interest in science and also in UFOs. And so I was calling from all of these different fields. And when I put it together, I can remember having to sit down with all this information that was years worth of research and trying to put it in some type of a logical order. And it looked like this was just the most enormous project. But it worked out, here we have it. We now have the book called How the Hell to Get Out of Hell, Other Dimensions, and Psychic Phenomena.
When you were doing your research way back, did you ever come across a book called Breakthrough to Creativity?
Yes.
That was my aunt who did that. And she lived, would have been one of the foremost researchers into the psychic world. And she turned her entire practice of psychiatry into this area, and she just absolutely loved it. For her, it was riveting. I remember my father, because she was related to him on his side, and I remember him telling me what she did and how she did it. He always knew that I was interested in all this as a kid, and then years later, I met her, and we conversed a lot about the things that she was working on, but truly a remarkable woman, Diane, and I wish you were here today because she'd be part of this discussion with us.
Well, I'll tell you something. Excuse me. I'd like to interject something at this point.
Sure.
I was up in Northern California, and my aunt and I tried to get into a lecture she was giving. And we got there, and they were completely sold out. And they said, well, can we stand in the back? And they said, no, we're sorry. We just can't let any more people in.
That's something. Packed.
She
packed
had a
to the
very
gills.
Big following.
Dr. Shafika.
Yes.
Yeah, she was one of a kind. But, and that could be, you know, one of the reasons why I continue to push this. Very interested. And, you know, you call this how to get out of hell. A lot of people have said hell is right here. What do you say?
Well, it is if you consider the dimensions. The way I used to explain it to the children at the middle school was that here's the way the dimensions exist. Say that you're lying on a on a couch and you have a remote control in your hand.
That makes me the couch potato.
The couch potato, and also you're watching television and you're watching Channel 1, but you decide that you don't like what's on that, so you switch to Channel 3, and that's a rerun. So you switch to Channel 5, and that doesn't interest you, so you switch to Channel 7. Now, for all intents and purposes, you have not moved. The couch hasn't moved. The television set hasn't moved. Where are all the other dimensions?
Yeah, okay. All right.
They're still there with you. The only reason you cannot see them is because you're not tuned into their frequency.
Right. Good point.
And that's exactly how all of this operates in the universe that is known to us and that is applicable to us. We are in dimension three. Now, let me tell you about actually getting out of hell. I'm going to preface it with that, and then we'll go into dimension three in the other.
Well, and tell me your definition of hell, first of all.
Well, hell is a really horrible place of suffering and ugliness. From what I have researched, I read some very terrifying things.
So you're not too far off then from what most religions have said what hell is.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes, and then we can go into, like, who really goes to hell. And hell actually will end at some point, but that's going to be in God's time and not in our time. Would you like to talk about the other dimensions first, and then we'll go into hell?
Diane, you're on with me for 3 hours. It's your decision.
Oh, boy. Okay. Well, first of all, as to how to get out of hell, it depends upon what level you go to. And let me begin by explaining that in 1984, the superstring theory in physics postulated that there were 10 dimensions, and Buddhism taught the same thing, and that the dimensions were subdivided into 7 to 49 other levels. The 10th dimension has 20 subdivisions.
Oh, my. Okay.
Now, as I said, we are the third dimension, with the two dimensions below us being varying levels of hell, purgatory, and limbo.
So we're down there almost at the bottom.
We're actually one step down from heaven and one step up from hell. That's the way I always explained it. The seven dimensions above us are the seven heavens about which St. Paul spoke in the Bible. Dimension four is what we know as the Christian heaven. And dimension five does not have any Earth-type construct. It's described as a deep, radiant, black void like outer space and sometimes with stars. The individual exists there only as mind, and thought there is telepathic. There is also a chance to reincarnate. Dimensions 6, 7, 8, and 9 have no construct to which the human mind can relate. And at this point, Gautama Buddha refused to give his followers any information because he thought it would only confuse them. Hermes Trismegistus, he also knew about them. He's, of course, associated with the Great Pyramid in Egypt. And he was silent about them, probably because the human mind has a problem comprehending infinity. Dimension 10, which we said, you know, is comprised of 20 subdivisions. Here, the individual re-merges with God, or if you want to call it the source of the force, whatever, you know, someone wants to name the creation source. And at that time, when you remerge with God, the dimensions, which are actually an illusion, collapse.
And I assume you're dead, physically dead, to get into that dimension.
Oh, yeah. Well, you can actually be dead when you reach this dimension, at least physically dead. When
all the other dimensions. Okay.
Right. At any rate, the soul then becomes part of a life field, but it still retains its individuality. And the way I explain it was to envision a checkerboard. Each square is an individual, but it's part of the same field. And as for getting out of hell, it depends where in hell you go to.
Okay, now with these various dimensions that are out there, how important are they for all of us? I mean, as far as most of us are concerned, if we can get one step up into this so-called heaven area, that's probably good enough. But how far do you want to go?
Well, you have to. Everyone will eventually have to remerge with God. And the way I explain it, and as I say, I used to explain this to the middle school kids, think of a sparkler.
This wasn't too deep for them?
No, it wasn't.
There's hope for us yet, though.
I think so, yes. I would explain now, imagine a sparkler, and God is the sparkler. You know what we think that we have at the 4th of July and the sparks shoot off?
Yep.
That's our souls going out. And then when it's time for us to go back, just think of reversing the film, you know, and the sparks go back into the sparkler. And that's how we will respond to what God has given us to do.
Of course, what happens when the sparkler simply burns out?
Well, then I have read, you know, kind of the works of the great mystics, and supposedly it all starts over again, and I really don't know if I'm ready for all of this again. Also, if, you know, some people would think that a lot of the near-death experience might be due to some physical cause, and actually the great argument for the validity of the near-death experience is that it has been experienced throughout the world for thousands of years with similarity by people of different cultural and religious backgrounds. Now, since brains are actually in the throes of death when this occurs in experiencing oxygen deprivation, the brain is disorganized. At this point, it cannot manifest coherent hallucinations, and these are coherent experiences.
And that is probably an argument, then, why this isn't due to some kind of physical abnormality.
That's right, exactly. During the actual physical death, a process takes place which is referred to as the dissolution of the great chain of being, and the dissolutions take place in this order. First, the body into the mind, which is the physical death, and during the dissolution of the ordinary mind associated with the physical body, there takes place a series of events which are further dissolutions of the four essences or drops. The white essence, which is inherited from the Father, is found at the top of the head, and this is presumed to be the enlightenment mind. The red essence, which is inherited from the Mother, is found at the center of the navel. The third essence is found in the middle of the heart chakra and contains everything of the present lifetime. It dissolves before the soul begins traveling the dimensions, and this traveling is called the bardo experience.
Okay, if we're on dimension three right now, right?
Right.
And hell is what dimension?
Hell is dimensions one and two.
One and two. If we're already on dimension three, how do some of us end up going back to dimensions one and two? What has caused that to happen?
Okay. Let me explain it this way. The mind.
You're going to have to do it after the break, Diane, okay? We'll be right back with you. Well, if you're in the greater Chicago area this weekend, Saturday and Sunday, I will be at the Psychotronics Convention there. It's a major conference that they've been putting on for years. So come on by. Information at coasttocoastam.com, or you can go to their website at psychotronics.org. Okay, Diane, I was chatting with you about hell and how we end up going down into it if we're already beyond it.
Yeah, well, not quite. I thought we'd pick up where you meet the light at the end of the tunnel, and then you have your life review. And then at that point is where the Bardo experience begins. And the soul enters a realm of projected imagination. Now, this is very important. The projection is the reflected image of the state of your soul. The teachings of reincarnation are that the soul transmigrates unless it is enlightened. And for liberation to happen and the cycle of reincarnation to stop, the soul must dissolve into spirit and recognize the higher realms and realize that it has a pantheistic existence. But this happens only after enlightenment has been reached by the accumulation of virtue and wisdom. At any rate, shall I go on here, or do you have something in particular that you would like to ask?
Go on. I'll jump in when I'm ready.
Okay, now there's a way to get out of traveling the realms of hell, and it's through meditation, and it doesn't matter what kind of meditation, because prayer is meditation, and all types of meditation are ways to transcend the ego and experience other realms or dimensions. The aim is to relinquish the sense of separateness and recognize your true self and not turn away from it. At this point, reincarnation can either be chosen rather than enforced. There are two different ways to go on reincarnation. True enlightenment is actually attained by everyone at the time of death. The average person, however, is usually unable to recognize it. The recognition comes to those who meditate and are able to identify it. They must then merge with it and then attain enlightenment. Now, here's the thing. If you unfortunately encounter the Bardo, there are still opportunities to escape by realizing the true nature of the reality of the visions. But the best way is to leave this dimension with love and peace uppermost in your mind.
What if you live, Diane, in a righteous way? What if we're human beings, we're going to do some dumb things in our lives, but what if you generally live very righteous, you care about people, but you don't meditate? Does that mean you're out of luck, that you could go to hell?
It does.
Really?
Well, what it is, it's not so much that you go to hell, but that you have to experience this Bardo situation, and it's a really bad thing. When death comes, the mind momentarily faints, and unless you're already familiar with meditation practice or bad karma, this darkness will remain for an extended period of time. Eventually, a light will appear, but it will only be a brief flicker. If you practice meditation and experience the other levels of existence, you will merge with the light, which is the light of the mind, and then you will attain enlightenment.
Now, is there anything that backs this up scientifically, or are we dealing on a spiritual nature here?
No, actually, I'll tell you what, there really is scientific support for this. In 1935, Albert Einstein and Nathan Rosen co-authored a paper that a parallel universe could be located in an area of space that was spherical if it had an enormous body in its center that was gravitationally stressing it. And last night when I was listening to Dr. Mallett, and
yes,
he was talking about, the time, spanning time, and he was going through these different theories, and I kept thinking to myself, the Einstein-Rosen bridge theory, why isn't he talking about the Einstein-Rosen bridge theory? And I was trying to think, I think it's 1935, and then he finally did mention it. I was really glad that he did, because I wrote about this also in my book.
Yeah, he's very, very efficient, isn't he? He was a good guest good person.
Yes, he was very good. And anyway, this Einstein-Rosen bridge theory actually turned out to be the discovery of black holes. That discovery led them to another discovery, which was that not only wasn't this a hole, but that it was a tunnel to another possible universe. And these holes are also known as wormholes.
Yes.
And they connect two different areas in the same universe, or they connect two different or parallel universes, and wormholes are found in black holes. According to theoretical physicists, at the beginning of the universe, all of the parallel universes were mashed together, one on top of the other. They believed that it was only a matter of time before this one vast universe divided into many parallel universes, and that they did this by a number of parallel Big Bangs, one for each universe.
Do these parallel universes, Diane, if you were to envision them, do they look like bubbles all stuck together? You know how they look when they're all adjoined?
No, I don't think so. I'll tell you why. In all of the research that I did, and I researched for years, it's not so that much as it's bubbles, as it's a different vibration. That's what it is.
See, my question is, if they're not stuck together like that, what's between them?
There isn't anything. It's like, as I said, you know, you turn the channel on the dial. They're all still here. They just broadcast at different frequencies,
yeah.
And they're all intermingled.
Okay. I'm trying to picture this.
I know. It's not the easiest thing. It wasn't for me either. But at any rate, also, do you remember when you had George Knapp on and he was talking about Skinwalker Ranch?
Yes, when he was on as a guest, yeah.
Yes, and he said that they saw a hole open up and mm-hmm. that a Bigfoot crawled out. And this is probably working the same way as what's just been described by this theory. And it's also believed that parallel universes are even necessary, and that every event in every universe is interconnected and affects the whole. By the way, the parallel universe theory also provides an explanation for time loops. And a time loop can go either backward or forward in time before looping back to the present. And this provides a basis for time travel, which Dr. Mallett was talking about last night.
Do some consider these extra dimensions we've been talking about as parallel universes, or are they separate?
You know, I think that a parallel universe is separate. I don't think that has been determined yet.
Okay.
I used to have the great advantage of talking to my cousin's husband, who was a physicist, and he was nationally known for his work with, it was either the linear accelerator or the cyclotron, I don't remember which, but he really coached me, I think, very well in some areas. And I know that you've also had Fred Wolf on as a
mm-hmm.
guest, the theoretical physicist.
Yep.
And what I came across, that he believes that during sleep we may be able to observe other realities, and that he also contends that schizophrenics may be actually discerning some of these other realities, because they will report hearing voices and seeing people unseen to others, and even smelling odors that are non-existent to those around them.
Okay, you mentioned in your ebook, which one day will be a real book, EVP investigations, experts who go out and look for sound. Tell me the tie-in with some of the things we've been talking about now.
Well, what they're doing is they're actually tapping into the other dimensions that we're talking about. And I think that a lot of the veils between the dimensions are breaking down. And, you know, I'm just sure that eventually there will be electronic devices that are very sophisticated. And I don't know if I'll see it in my lifetime. You know, maybe 50 years from now they'll have them. And it's just as well, because I'm sure if I tap into my mother, the first thing she's going to say to me is, did you have to wear that dress to my funeral?
I've got to get you to play with what is called Frank's Box, which they say might allow you to talk to the other side.
I would be willing to do that. I really would.
I wonder if we can get one and you can do some research on it. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, I tell you what, go to visionaryliving.com. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, she's a regular guest on the program, visionaryliving.com. Send her an email, explain who you are. I think she can get you one. To use out, and I would be very interested in your reaction to this thing, Diane.
Well, I think I would be very interested into it also, and I'd be happy to give you some more information about the dying process.
Yeah.
Now, I actually did most of my research with the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and it's used by all of the different Buddhist sects. And also, I had belonged to IANS, which is the International Association for Near-Death Studies, probably as early as 1981, before anybody ever really knew about the near-death experience. And it was from people who had also had negative near-death experiences that I garnered a lot of this information. According to the teachings of Tantra, Vedanta, and yoga is actually a specific sect of Hinduism, we have five bodies: the physical body, the etheric body, which is comprised of layers of energy, the astral body, which is the emotional body and is associated with the dream world, the mental body, which is the body of logic, reasoning, and decision-making, and the spiritual body. The spiritual body is the most profound part of our being. Now, a minimum of six things can occur to the spiritual body when physical death ensues, and here's what can happen. It can become earthbound. This can happen if a person dies in a depressing or lonely situation or an horrific or violent one. Under these circumstances, they do not know they are dead. When the astral body disintegrates, it disintegrates into the walls. By sheer chance, someone may show up who just happens to be the right catalyst to activate the energy. And in my conversations with various Catholic bishops' offices throughout the United States, they have informed me that they will not send someone out for hauntings, but you can ask a local priest to bless the surroundings. However, there are powerful sounds called Shakti mantras, which will immediately eliminate that energy, and that would have to be done by a Hindu who knows how to do that.
Okay, so you do need someone like a teacher to be part of this.
Yeah, you really do need someone who is an expert in that field.
Okay.
Now, a second thing that can happen is that the individual, because it retains its astral, mental, and spiritual bodies, is unable to leave its surroundings. Now, it may want to possess another living person and will actually seek out a vulnerable individual with whom to merge, but this is an unlikely scenario. Another alternative is that the etheric body begins to disintegrate and the astral body defers to the lower astral plane, where a thought is immediately translated into reality. What will happen is that they will continuously relive their death, and it may take 1,000 to 6,000 years before the astral plane disintegrates for them. The fourth thing that can happen is that the mental body can either retain a person's lifetime or it can relinquish it at death. If it retains the lifetime memory, it will continuously relive that life in regular time from birth to death. And again, the entity may stay there for 1,000 to 6,000 years before the mental body is able to depart. The fifth thing is reincarnation. And again, reincarnation either by choice or by enforcement. It's considered either an upward or downward spiral, evolution or devolution. The last situation is that beyond reincarnation is freedom. It occurs with complete dissolution of the etheric, astral, and mental bodies. What remains is the spiritual body, which will return from where it came, which is the cosmic field. If you're wondering if you can expect all of this, yes, because...
Let me ask you this. When you said reincarnation is also done by enforcement, what did you mean by that?
You may not want to come back for whatever reason, but the powers that be will dictate that you have to come back.
Okay.
Now, millions of people have actually had the experience of the dimensions for thousands of years through a crisis or near-death experience or deep meditation. And I'd like to talk about a little bit more about what is in these dimensions. Dimensions 1 and 2, you know, we have already said are supposed to be the dimensions of hell, limbo, and purgatory, with hell having degrees of intensifying misery, or as it is stated in religious teaching, the pits. people who have had near-death experiences say that hell is a very real place. The horrors of the lowest of these dimensions are reserved for those with sexual perversions, sadists, psychopaths, drug addicts, alcoholics, suicides, murderers, mean, unloving, greedy people, criminals, and other serious sinners. There have been reports that these people are unceasingly attacking each other and are in constant torment.
Why do they put alcoholics in that batch?
Because
to me, it's a disease. The other people, though they could be diseased, seem to be doing their evil at will. So that's interesting. Why would that be?
Well, here's the thing. I will tell you this, that not all of this agrees with my own personal feelings.
No, I understand.
And when I was writing this, I thought, you know, this isn't what I believe, but it would be unethical if I did not put in what I had actually found in my research. So I put what I had found in the research. Now, here is the thing. Alcoholism, they know, is genetic. And we won't go into all of that, but I've looked at thermographic pictures of the brains of the alcoholics. And, I mean, there's definitely a genetic propensity, and it exists particularly in certain nationalities. And I also go into other things about genetics in this book. As I say, I don't agree with all of this, but I'm just reporting what I found.
No, I agree. But my question, though, is to me, an alcoholic is as far away from being as evil as those people. Now, I'm not talking about what he or she may do in that state. They may beat up their spouses. Who knows? But I'm saying they're surely not like these other people you described.
Well, I agree, you know, because I believe that it is genetic, and that maybe the only way I could think of that they fit into this, or anyone else with a genetic predisposition to anything that would be negative, is that they didn't control it. That's the only way
right.
I can justify this. There is another level where the chakras, particularly those abused, must be burned off. And this is believed to be so painful that the souls there clamor to reincarnate to stop the burning, because reincarnation affords them the opportunity to reverse their karma without pain. Those who have experienced this reality say that they also experienced for themselves while they were viewing it anguish, despair, desperation, desolation, disgust, horror, fear, and extreme loneliness.
So you're saying, though, there's pain on the other side?
Oh, yes, very definitely. And it's very real. And they said that these feelings were caused by demonic, hellish, and nightmarish scenes of great clarity. There were encounters that were reported that included existing alone in a great and total void, a frightening nothingness. They were told that life had been nothing more than an illusion and a mean hoax. And this was accompanied by unseen and laughing voices. Now, this is not to be confused with Dimension 5, which is the radiant black void. One near-death experiencer reported that they had seen hellish landscapes and demonic beings, and they also saw a soul surrounded by chattering devils. Another person was shown a scene of incredible ugliness and a man in great pain, and he knew that he, too, would experience that pain if he didn't get out of there.
And that's Dimension 5. Well, stay with us. We'll finish up with Dimension 5 and the other dimensions when we come right back.